Welcome to the Diplomats podcast on Asian geopolitics. I'm Ankit Panda from New York.
And I'm Zachary Keck from Washington.
Today we have a guest with us to discuss the implications of Thailand's political crisis and coup. Serhat Unaldi is here with us today. Serhat is joining us from the Bertelsmann Stiftung in Germany, where he's a project manager and an expert on contemporary Thai politics. Thank you for joining us, Serhat.
Thank you for having me on your show.
We're very excited to have you here today because many of our listeners are interested in the implications of the Thai coup, which is its 12th coup since 1932. So I wanted to just start off by discussing the timing of this coup. It seemed to me that throughout most of the unrest, the military had been very reluctant to intervene. Then after the May 15th attack on a yellow shirt protest camp, the military issued a warning, followed briefly by martial law and the coup. Yet the way the events proceeded indicate that some advanced preparation may have been at work. So I was just wondering what your thoughts are about how much of this was planned out by the military and why they decided to act now.
Yeah, we don't know for sure why the coup happened. The simple answer would be that the army chief lost somehow his patience. General Prayut did not see another way out of the conflict, maybe. After all, there was no compromise in sight. And new elections would have done nothing to calm down the opposition. And Thailand has an entrenched coup culture. We shouldn't forget that. And it's simply a natural reflex for army men to restore peace and order by force. And that's why the attack on some protesters was a convenient excuse for the armies to step in. And another theory would be that the king's health is getting worse. Some analysts think that the military wants to control Thailand's royal succession. And if King Bhumibol dies soon, that would, of course, be a reason for the military to take over the government and be in charge. And unlike Juan Carlos of Spain, King Bhumibol left the question of succession unanswered. And now for two very different reasons, both monarchies are now on the brink of collapse.
Sarah, if I could jump in here.
Sure.
You mentioned the monarchy, and I was just wondering, the coup leader, I've said the Thai king endorses the coup, so I just wanted to think, what do you think the role the monarchy was playing in this as far as, like, are the factions in the palace backing the generals? And, I mean, you noted in your recent piece that in some ways the military was usurping the king's power by declaring martial law and carrying out the coup. And it's my understanding that in the past the military had usually gotten the king's explicit approval before moving. Is that correct?
Yeah, first, yes, some members of the royal family are definitely backing the generals. Princess Chulapon, the king's youngest daughter, was a staunch supporter of the Yellow Shirts in recent months, and I can only guess that she and others also welcomed the coup. And after all, the coup was directed against the Thaksin affiliated government, so the opponents of Thaksin also in the palace would have approved of the coup. There are definitely factions in the palace who are very happy about what happened, but we cannot infer from that that King Bhumibol himself supported the coup. His royal charisma has been exploited for decades by anti-democratic factions, and it's interesting that the king did not personally endorse General Prayut. Prayut only received a letter, and that could be for two reasons. Either the king is too frail now, or royalists want to protect the king from association with yet another autocratic intervention. What's interesting is that the crown prince was in Britain when the coup happened, and some took this as a sign that he fled from the generals because he is rumored to be close to Thaksin. However, a few analysts said that the prince has come to an agreement with the military and that his troops were actively supporting the coup. And only time will show, I guess, who is right.
Thanks a lot. So I just have another question. You know, the man at the center of this entire coup is General Prayuth Chan Ocha, as you've said. He seems like a very interesting character. Could you provide us with some more background about him, his career, where he's coming from, if he was involved in the earlier coups in Thailand a few years ago?
Sure. General Prayut hates Thaksin, that's for sure. But he loves the monarchy, and he's an ultra-royalist. He has called critics of the monarchy abnormal, and that tells you already that he's a hardliner, and he was in charge of the violent crackdown on red shirts in 2010. That's not no surprise there. As a reward, the government of the Democrat Party at the time appointed him army chief. In 2006, his troops were vital for the success of the coup against Thaksin. And Prayut is also a member of a dominant military faction, the Queen's Guard, and of the army class number 12, which is quite influential right now. And he is a protege of Prem Tinsulanon, who heads the king's advisory body, the Privy Council, and Prem was prime minister in the 1980s and still has a Cold War mindset. The counterinsurgency measures that were used against communists back then are now again applied by his protege, Prayut, against the Red Shirts.
All right, I just have to ask at this point, like, what's the deal with the Hunger Games three-finger salute and the protesters have been adopting in recent days? Like, first off, is this just the Red Shirts that are doing this, to your knowledge, or is it all the protesters?
No, it's actually not only the Red Shirts. Many people who are against the coup, and not only Red Shirts, are against the coup. There are some intellectuals who neither back Thaksin nor the coup makers who have adopted the salute. It's just a catchy symbol, I guess. It's a symbol of people standing up to an oppressive regime. And like in the movie, some people who have been flashing the sign in public were violently arrested now in Thailand. And some Thais feel that the country is not very different from the Hunger Games, Panem. You have an arrogant capital city which exploits the labor of people in the districts and cracks down on any kind of dissent. So you have quite obvious parallels there, and it's no surprise that this salute has been adopted by those opposing the coup.
Okay, so you're saying it came pretty organically? Like, no groups or influential people called for people to start doing it? It was more just like the Hunger Games, I guess, are popular in Thailand, and it kind of like people started doing it? Or was it directed by, called for by someone, an organization or something?
Yeah, no, there was actually one person. His name is Sombat Bunnam Anong, who started this. He's a well-known Red Shirt activist and intellectual, and he lives now in hiding, but he uses his Facebook account to initiate anti-coup flash mobs. Last Sunday, he posted the three-finger salute on his timeline and asked people to protest in front of a shopping mall, and that's how everything started then. In times of crisis, Sombat always kind of keeps the Red Shirt movement alive, and yeah, you could say that the way Panem has a girl on fire with Sombat, Thailand has a boy on fire somehow. But I guess not all protesters know that the salute is from the Hunger Games. I think some think that the three fingers stand for the French Revolution. I've heard something like that. Liberty, equality, and fraternity. So three fingers and those three catchwords there.
That's very interesting. So let's take a step back for a minute. I just want to go back to your piece that you wrote for The Diplomat, which, by the way, all listeners should take a read. It's a very succinct and clear explanation of the Thai crisis. So as you note in your piece, much of the political unrest in Thailand in recent years has been caused by larger societal changes. A lot of this has to do with the urban-rural divide, the divide between Democrats and Royalists. And I believe in your piece, you writing the title, you called it the story of Thailand's two middle classes. So can you just tell our listeners a bit more about what you mean by this?
Yeah, sure. Usually the Thai conflict is explained as the poor against the rich. I guess all of us have heard that. But that's not really the case. It's not that simple, because research has shown that many Red Shirts belong actually to the lower middle classes. They comprise groups who have experienced improvements in their lives after Thaksin came to power, because he gave them something like cheap healthcare, easy credit, market access and stuff. And their lives improved and their aspirations were growing as a result. But their hopes to catch up with the established middle class in Bangkok were dashed when the 2006 coup happened. And that coup was supported by that established urban middle class who associated their good life with the long reign of King Bhumibol. And they feared that Thaksin was on a way of becoming a rival monarch of sorts with rival followers. And those followers wanted a piece of the cake that the old middle class was now eating for decades. And that's how an old middle class somehow turned against a new rising one. And it's important to note that the Thai crisis is not just about elites struggling over royal succession, but also, and very much so, about those social shifts in Thai society, socioeconomic shifts.
Well, going on that then for a minute, like, what good can the coup do then? I mean, when they had the coup back in 2006, I think, if I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I am, they had more, the generals had more or less the same priorities in sort of trying to create a new political balance that would foster greater cooperation between these like emerging demographics in Thailand. So do you believe that this time they'll be able to shape a new, better political balance and foster reconciliation? Or what kind of things would be necessary to even do that? Or Is this even really the military's goal, or is it just an excuse?
Yeah, surprisingly, I do think that reconciliation is the aim of the military. But unfortunately, the military has a quite a distorted idea of what that word means. The generals seem to think that cracking down on dissent and re-educating people will bring back peace and reconciliation. And they think that brainwashing alone will stabilize the country. But that's, of course, a fatal mistake unless the generals understand that Thailand has changed since the 1980s and that reconciliation isn't a one-way street. The coup won't solve much, I guess. When the military declared martial law and brought the opposing sides together at one table, at first, I was almost willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. But the opposing factions have to talk, and an elite settlement is necessary. That's why those first talks were quite promising, but I'm losing my optimism now because seeing that the military has chosen old tools to fix new problems doesn't make me very optimistic now. There still is a slight chance that the military is really listening to the concerns of the various people it summons, but I guess the generals, maybe they even want to understand the situation better, but most of their actions point to their ignorance, I guess.
Do you mean when you say that? If I could just follow up, you say that because they're taking sides in the dispute, or is it just your general view that? Do you know what I mean? Like, because there's been some people saying that they talked to the red shirt, that they've only really been targeting red shirt leaders, mainly not only but mainly them. And is that your view? Just to follow up real quick.
Yes, I think it's true that mainly redshirt supporters have been summoned and arrested and cracked down on by the military because, I guess the opposition to the coup comes from the redshirt camp and from intellectuals, and it's these people who are the victims of the crackdown. So this one-sidedness cast doubt on Prayut's claim that he stepped in to foster reconciliation rather than stifle dissent.
Okay, so just before we end, could you just talk a bit about the international response to this coup in terms of how the EU, the US, and the ASEAN responded? So on the podcast right after the coup, both Zach and I said that we were surprised at how quickly the United States labeled this a coup, given the implication this has under U.S. domestic law for military and other assistance. Are these international actors doing enough, in your impression? Should they be doing more or less?
Before talking about the U.S., I would like to talk about Australia, because Australia has taken the strongest measures against Thailand and the coup makers. It imposed a travel ban on the junta leaders and also cut defense cooperation. And I think to increase the pressure on the generals, foreign governments should follow Australia's example. Even economic sanctions might be considered, since the Thai junta will try to gain legitimacy by getting the Thai economy back on track. At the same time, the junta might try to blame the previous government for the current downturn and not the anti-democratic forces that hold Thailand in its grip. So the generals should not be allowed to present themselves as such saviors. So economic sanctions might be a tool to prevent that from happening. For example, looking at the situation from a European perspective, Thailand is due to depart from the EU's generalized system of preferences in 2015, and only an FTA with the EU can ensure that Thailand continues to enjoy favorable access to the EU. And this pressure could be used to encourage a solution to the crisis by democratic means. But also there are, of course, global strategic implications for the U.S., and especially with the U.S. pivot to Southeast Asia, Thailand and the whole region is quite important. And cutting the connection to Thailand would probably be not the first thing that the U.S. want to do at this time. But on the other hand, democratic Thailand is very much in the interest of the United States. So it should do much more in order to ensure that Thailand reverts back to a democratic system of government and elections.
Great. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us. That was absolutely a very informative view to help us understand the Thai conflict a bit more.
Thank you. That's really helpful.
And for listeners, Sarah does have a piece up for us at The Diplomat that you can check out on the website. So thanks a lot for listening, and we'll be back next week with more about Asian geopolitics.
Thank you.